This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And a good evening to everybody this evening. My name is Doug Kelly. It's so good to have you to join us tonight for Sunday, July 17th. And you'll be absolutely delighted to know that I ordered my new speaking voice and it should be in, thus allowing me to speak fluently. I hope it will be in by next week's show. Anyway, so good to have everybody with us tonight. Empower of the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. It is our mission to explore and empower the human spirit, and we do that in a variety of ways, including talking about, obviously, metaphysical topics, but also practical life skills. This is a program about enhancing the human condition, both spiritually and physically. So tonight on the program, we are going to be discussing metaphysics, human evolution. Somebody's telling me I'm not very loud, so let me get that before I tell you what we're talking about. I'm going to just talk for a moment until I get some feedback from the chat room. They say I'm not very loud. Let me check a couple of things, folks. Sorry about that. I thought everything was all set and ready to go.
Now I see that it is now ready to go. You should be hearing me very good now. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. I appreciate that. Okay, back to the presentation. Welcome to the program. Tonight's topics are metaphysics, human evolution, and peaceful coexistence. We'll be talking about that in a moment. We're going to also do the guided meditation session. It's going to be about 17 minutes long, and the theme on this meditation tonight is make your dreams come true. So it'll be a good opportunity to relax and to just take in some good information. Let's see. Following this program is, of course, Dr. Vicky, her psychic perspective. She's going to be taking your calls and offering psychic and spiritual insights for your life. So what does that mean? That means that if you have some challenges in life, relationships, wondering which direction might be the best, maybe looking for some advice on that, some psychic advice, you can call in and talk to Dr. Vicky, and she will help you with that. So please stay tuned. That's following this program right up at the top of the hour. Okay, so now that we've got everything fixed here, let's talk about metaphysics, human evolution, and peaceful coexistence. Now, this topic tonight is really based on the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science principle of belief number 9. That belief states, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So that is the principle of belief that we're going to talk about. So let me just separate it a little bit. Let me know if the sound is back now. Maybe it was just a glitch in the chat room. Okay, so I'll make an announcement a little bit after my presentation here about some positive changes we're making to make things run a little bit smoother with the program here. Let me separate principle number 9 into some parts that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the true nature of consciousness. What exactly does that mean? That's coming up. But what is it about understanding this or discovering this that will have a positive benefit to humanity? That's what we're going to talk about, including a peaceful coexistence. So let's discuss that. And let me open it up with this question. What would humanity's reaction be if science discovered objective proof that human consciousness coherently survives the physical death of the body? Obviously, the religions of the world would be vindicated because they've been teaching that all along, but the scientific community might have a lot of a splaining to do because they've narrow-mindedly poo-pooed that subject for so many decades. the concept of materialism teaches that everything can be explained with material physical matter. There is no consciousness, really. There's no spirituality. There's no, you know, life after death, anything like that. So if we could prove that we survived death on some other plane, that would be a big thing. Well, how about a second scenario? What would humanity's reaction be if today it was reported on the news that extraterrestrial contact had been made with a species that's been here studying the Earth, studying the world, and now we're opening up dialogue with these extraterrestrials and talking about, you know, whatever they want to talk about, their presence here. What kind of an impact would that make on humanity? Well, in this case, the reaction might be a bit different than the first scenario. Science would undoubtedly be elated, but many of the religions of the world, especially fundamentalist Christians, would likely plunge into some degree of chaos, one degree or another, because most of these religions teach that humans are it as far as intelligent life goes in the universe. Such earth-shaking discoveries as ETs would certainly precipitate a global paradigm shift for most of humanity. I'm sure you'd agree. Some people would welcome it. Some people would take it in stride. Others might freak out. We would almost certainly see changes in religious dogma, with some even leaving religion because, well, now they see it as kind of outdated, not teaching them the right stuff. However, not everybody would leave religion. They would merely just adjust to the new reality. Even the Catholic Church, which is kind of a good thing, has positioned themselves over the past few years for the likely confirmation of extraterrestrial life by stating that such a concept does not contradict the Bible. My reaction to that, wow, what, you know, did they see the writing on the wall? No pun intended, so to speak. Well, yeah, they did. And their move was a brilliant move, knowing the impact that such news of extraterrestrial presence might have on their faithful. They have, in effect, done damage control before the fact. So, you know, it was a brilliant move. More churches ought to be doing that. But in the end, after such an announcement as the existence, the verified existence of extraterrestrial life, and I'm talking about intelligent life here, in the end, after just a few short weeks, in my opinion, equilibrium would be restored, reestablished. Life would, by and large, go back to normal, but humanity would be forever changed. And this is a good thing, for such a shift would be an evolutionary step in the right direction. What about the positive side of such news stories? Well, in the first scenario, we were talking about confirmation of life after death. Think of the relief that everyone would feel knowing that their dead loved ones are not really dead at all, that they might see them again, knowing that whatever pain and suffering they might have been feeling here in this life, well, that's gone now. They're in another chapter of a yet much longer life. Such news would also give hope to those who are struggling, because they would know that this is not all there is. There's more to come, another chapter, and hopefully a better chapter. In the second scenario that we discussed about verifying the existence of ETs, the positive side of that, if we were to get proof of extraterrestrial intelligence, our suspicions that we are not alone in the universe would be validated. We would realize that we are part of a much greater brotherhood, if you want to use the word. And the ETs, well, they would be part of that brotherhood because we're all made from the same star material, the same star stuff. Perhaps such news as this would help us as a race to stop taking ourselves so seriously and to focus on resolving our problems and stop killing ourselves. So what we've done here is essentially I propose something. If we were to discover the true nature of consciousness, or at least discover more about it and how it works, you know, part of that is survival of death. I mean, that's a big part, because a lot of different folks believe, and some religions do teach, that the consciousness does survive death of the physical body. In fact, many religions teach that in one way or another. So these would be in my opinion, even though they might have some fallout, depending on the news, they would still be a positive thing for humanity. It would help us to grow. It would be a good thing. It would help us to know we're not alone and things like that. Well, how about a third scenario? What if we discovered objective proof that our consciousness does not survive death of the body? What if we discovered proof that extraterrestrials do not exist, ultimately leaving humans as the only intelligent life in the universe? Think about that for a moment. Would not these two theoretical findings also mean a major paradigm shift for humanity? I believe they absolutely would. And here's the fascinating thing. Virtually the same outcomes would happen as described earlier. Namely, religious dogma would have to change because most religions teach the immortality of the soul. Well, they can't teach that anymore because we've proven it's not real. And if this was the case, by the way, we as a race would have to stop taking ourselves so seriously and stop killing ourselves because we're it. There is no one else. And that's the same thing with the extraterrestrial thing. So let me sum everything up just to kind of bring you up to speed if I've been a little unclear. We set up a scenario. What if we discovered there was proof of life after death? What if we discovered there was proof of extraterrestrials here visiting Earth? Obviously, there would be some fallout. It would freak some people out, especially with the ETs. But we would adjust. Things would go back to normal. But we would have evolved knowing we're not alone. And so we can be a part of this bigger brotherhood. And we would also be comforted because we know our dead loved ones are not really just dead, but they're better off. And we'll see them again. Positive things. And then I also said, well, what if the opposite is true? What if we discovered proof that there is no life after death? What if we discovered proof that there are no extraterrestrials? You know, what would happen? Yeah, there would be some fallout. Some things would have to change. But we would move on. We would still have that paradigm shift. We would still know who we are. And we would still need to stop killing ourselves because we're it. We need to stop taking ourselves so seriously in either scenario, in either outcome. That's what I'm trying to say about our principle of belief, number 9, that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. That's my belief. I think that we would weather that, and I think it would spell a major positive paradigm shift for humanity. Yes, in the beginning there would be a struggle, but there always is. You know, change is difficult, folks. We all know that. But the benefits far outweigh the consequences. Let's talk about another aspect of this, and that's kind of indirectly related, and that's the control exerted by governments and religion. All right. Over the eons, governments and religion have both sought to control the common people. Now, that's not news. We all know that. In fact, many people refer to other people as sheeple, you know, because some people are easily led, I guess. Bottom line of this, though, no one has the right to withhold such knowledge from us. So if we were talking about proof of life after death or proof of extraterrestrial intelligent life here visiting Earth or even existing in the universe, no one has the right to withhold such knowledge from us. It's our moral right to know the truth of reality regardless of what happens as a result. We're adults here, aren't we? We need to know the reality of our life. We need to know who we are, where we've come from, where we're going. We need to know the nature of reality. We have a moral right to know that. We're entitled to that. What is, and we have the right to know what is. Moreover, we have the moral responsibility to know what is. To withhold knowledge from others that directly affects them is nothing short of excessive control. Now, there's another side to this, too, and this can present an issue for some folks who are involved in cults. Here's a question. Should they be forced to know the truth? I mean, this is outside of even life after death being proven or ETs being proven. Right here, right now, there are cults, and they believe some funky things. Let me tell you, they do. Should they be forced to know the truth, even now? Should we go out of our way to make sure to tell them that their way of believing is wrong? Or should we let them be? Let them live their life, let them live their lie, and be as happy as they can be under the circumstances. Should we destroy their dream? Should we crumble their reality? Well, these are some deep questions, and they're not so easily answered, perhaps, because if you've ever been in a cult or come out of a cult, you probably have left friends or family in it, and you so desperately want them to know the truth of things, to know the reality of things. You know, it's part of our nature. It's part of loving them. It's part of wanting the best for them. And I've grappled with this, too, at times, because I left most of my family and friends in a cult, nearly all of them. And I would love, dearly love, to get a phone call someday from a brother or sister or my aunts or uncles or cousins or friends that says, you know what, I finally discovered it's not real, it's not true, and come out of it. Well, let's separate this question into two parts, or let me just give you two answers, I suppose. Yes, they do have a moral responsibility to know the truth. They do. But no, we don't have the right to force it upon them. Everyone is on their own path and must learn the lessons of this life and reap the benefits or the consequences, or both, depending on the choices made. So that's just kind of a side point to this principle. We have a moral responsibility to know the truth, and we should know the truth. That's what we should all desire to know, regardless of what it means. But that's not going to happen always. So what exactly does it mean to discover the true nature of consciousness? Is it even possible to discover the true nature of consciousness? Well, here's a better question. You know, what is the true nature of our consciousness, our individual consciousness? And I'm talking really about our purpose, the meaning we get in life. Getting to know oneself, becoming more complete within oneself, knowing who you are and knowing why you are who you are, coming out of that denial that it so grips humanity. And here's just an FYI, never underestimate the human capacity for denial, for it is astonishing, and I kid you not. Really discovering the true nature of our own consciousness involves becoming more aware of our surroundings as well as to the plight of others. So many of us get into that trap of just existing. We're eking out an existence. We're so busy eking out an existence, dealing with job stresses or family or kids or whatever, that we've forgotten how to live. This happens to parents, especially new parents. You know, the kids become the focal point, and they need all this attention, and that's fine. They should have it. But then the parents forget how to really live. They've forgotten the relationship they have with each other, and they need to also spend time with that. We can't forget who we are. We need to be aware of our fellow human being, because everybody's trying the best they can with the tools, the knowledge, the experience, the wisdom they have at the moment. Nobody really lies awake at night scheming against other people, trying to harm them, trying to screw with them at work, whether it's a colleague, coworker, whatever. Nobody does that. There are a few people on the planet who do. We call them sociopaths, but they're rare. So what does it mean to discover the true nature of your consciousness? Know who you are, why you are who you are, have a purpose, find meaning. And we've talked about this very thing on previous shows, about how to find your purpose. And the answer to that simple question, it can be very difficult. What do I call a good day? Just check the archives for previous shows about reinventing yourself. So the true nature of consciousness, what does it mean to discover that? Well, it would mean to understand where it goes. I would think that if we could find objective proof that the consciousness does survive physical death of the body in a coherent manner, that would be a huge leap forward in understanding it. Of course, there's a lot more to consciousness as well. I hope that you will make the decision to be part of the solution. And most people who listen to this program are. I have great hope that we as a race are on the right track. I personally believe that we are past the self-destruction phase as a species through the Cold War, you know, the nuclear weapons aimed at each other. I personally think we're past that phase. Could be totally wrong, but I don't think so. I think we've grown up a little bit. You know, the mutually assured destruction, the mad scenario. I think we're past that. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I'm not talking about terrorists. I'm talking about governments, about these superpowers not destroying life. I also believe that we are evolving due to perhaps the greatest invention ever devised by humanity. And I'm talking about the internet, the very thing that is allowing you to listen to me and me to talk to you tonight. Not only that, it brings together like-minded people. The internet is an amazing invention. It has helped so many people. It helped me to get out of a cult. It's helped a lot of people that way. It's brought together like-minded people that, such as you and me, who would have never met had it not been for the internet. The internet's amazing. It's a great tool. So be part of that solution and have a positive effect, whether you're a metaphysician or not, have a positive impact on those within your sphere of influence. Do right, do no harm, be the best you can be, and grow, and let go of denial. Accept things the way they are, but try to improve on them. And of course, if you want to learn more, listen to the previous episodes and the future episodes of this broadcast, and there's much more to come. Now, we're getting close to doing our Soul Light meditation. I just have a couple of announcements I wanted to go over. One of the big announcements here is that just this last week, I have updated the degree program format at the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, the metaphysicsinstitute.org. I had previously combined the bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees all into one, in the interest of helping adults get through it a little more quicker, an accelerated type format. Well, the accelerated format is still there, but I brought back the master's or the bachelor's and the master's degrees along the way. So it's actually a good thing because students who have been working toward their doctoral degree can now enjoy some milestones along the way. They can get their master's along the way. They can get their bachelor's, of course, before that. And then they can get their doctoral. Another aspect of this is that some students or some folks who are not yet enrolled may not want a doctoral degree, and that's perfectly fine. They might just want to be certified in spiritual counseling or hypnosis or coaching or paranormal science or whatever. And they can do that. They can just go as far as getting their master's degree in metaphysics, which is also a certification. Students who want to get their doctoral degree will then submit a dissertation and then graduate with their doctoral degree in metaphysics. So it's a little more flexible. It gives students milestones along the way. And if you're not yet enrolled, I invite you to visit the Metaphysics Institute. Just go to metaphysicsinstitute.org. There's links on the show page. There's links on the website. Look it up. And it's an excellent program, comprehensive. It will challenge you, and it will teach you not only metaphysics, but some excellent practical life skills as well. I also want to announce the addition of a new staff member, John Hightower. He is helping us with this program now. He's going to be screening calls and assisting in other ways. So we welcome John Hightower to the staff at MCHS Church for that. And so tonight's his first night, and he's there and monitoring, and so he will be available to screen calls for Dr. Vicky's program following this one. So we welcome John. I also want to take a moment to invite you to think about those folks you know, including yourself if this applies, who might be going through a hard time. And I want to take just a moment, and I want you to just take a deep breath and send out some positive energy, some positive thoughts to those people. This is about creating awareness. We talked about that just a few minutes ago, being aware of others' plights. And all you have to do with the power of deliberate intent, just send out some positive energy. I'm going to shut up for just a minute. Take this time to think of those who might need it and just send a little positive energy their way. I'll be back in just a moment. All right. Hopefully you know some people who could use it, and you did that. All right. So coming up next is our Soul Light meditation. I'm going to give you a chance to do a pit stop or whatever you need to do for about 3 minutes. And then we're going to come back, and we're going to do this Soul Light meditation, exploring the deep frontiers of your limitless self. And it's going to be on it's a great topic. It's a great way to just sit back and relax. So go take care of whatever business you got to take care of and come back. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Okay, welcome back. We're going to do our guided meditation. This is about 17 minutes long. The theme is Make Your Dreams Come True. I like these, and I've gotten some good feedback on them. I guess this one's 16 minutes and 12 seconds. My bad. What you should do now is sit back, get comfortable, make sure you're not going to be disturbed. Take a deep breath in through your nose. Hold to the mental count of three. Release it through your mouth slowly. Just take a deep breath and relax. And just buy out this time. This is your time. This is your moment. And just demand it. And with that, I'm going to begin the meditation.
This program is hypnotic in nature and is never to be experienced in a moving vehicle or other times when you need to maintain awakened consciousness. Welcome aboard your enlightening adventure. For if you've let so-called impediments prevent you from achieving your heart's dreams, then this is your time to sit or lie back more comfortably relaxed, perhaps reassured by the perseverance shown by the illustrious hero of Greek legend, Odysseus, whose ingenious ruse captured the Trojan city, and whose continual resourcefulness conquered each seeming adversity. Odysseus finally reaching his dreams by coming home to his own country. For isn't home where you bring your heart's dreams? Though as this long-told epic by sea enfolds, Odysseus is still far from home. Stranded, moreover, with no form of navigation, on the land of the Lotus Eaters. Often misconstrued, these islanders, seemingly welcoming newcomers, generously offering some of their own food, a delicious plant everyone hungrily devoured, though the lotus flower, soon proven to be spurious, delicious, true, but those who partook of this flower food lost all thought, all longing for home and their own hearts' true dreams. Overwhelmed solely by their desire to dwell forever in the country of the soul-numbing lotus flower, growing ever more reconciled to while away the hours, engaged in the same humdrum everyday routine, the life of bemused comfort and seeming ease. And though Odysseus too partook of the lotus flower, resolutely focused upon his dream, deeply believed he was completely immune to the plant's power. For Odysseus sought far more than the familiar, secure routine. He sought to realize what makes him feel fulfilled, to take in his hands the life his own heart demands, actualize his genuine potential in his own homeland, and completely instilled with his mind's commanding vision, Odysseus chose to leave behind the island's secure comfort zone and really find his heart's true home, the home of his dreams. And so drawn to the shore, we see the hero, Odysseus. A look of purpose, of determination in his eyes, searching the horizon, the line where ocean currents meet clear blue skies, searching for the means to reach the home too long left behind. And with his known resourcefulness, he conceived a plan, and from some trees produced wood and vines too, to bind the wood and design a raft equipped with mast and sail. And at last he continued on his trail seaward toward his destined meeting with the source of his dreams. This magnetic force pictured within his mind's eye, luring, drawing him ever further inside. These seas wide opening upon his dreams, as if decreed by the Olympic deities, predestined to be. And since we're all drawn by captivating dreams, you too may appreciate departing the familiar life routine, venturing inside your own heart's land of dreams, for herein resides a potent energy source, your infinitely magical life force, ready to formulate your most treasured imaginings. So even if you were once led astray by the naysayings of others and did not yet realize the energizing force of your own dreams, then you can especially enjoy journeying inside your life force, only desiring to be summoned forth, so you are provided your freedom, effortless freedom, to gratify your life's deepest fantasies. Yes, you can enjoy not having to do anything. You don't even have to listen to me, because your inner, wiser self is exploring for you. You're transporting life-transforming adventure. For you know when you're drifting within, inwardly, your deeper self can conceive visionary dreams. In those dreams, you can venture wherever you desire, even explore far across these ocean seas to see a few misty, wispy clouds shrouding otherwise clear blue skies as you lie back, more comfortably relaxed upon your own craft, your raft equipped with mast and sail, a breezy gale speeding you onward on your trail, right inside the wide opening life force sea. These currents streaming forth confident energy, leading you homeward, right toward your dreams. And so as you breathe in deeply, the gentle ocean breeze, when do you perceive how your breathing movements more closely resemble the rise and fall of these streaming currents? How each rise and fall of your chest and abdomen send currents of your own life sea streaming soothingly through you and enlightening you with the confident belief you can live your life as you demand your life to be. Your commanding dream, your destination, serenely pictured in your mind's eye. With each breath deep, perceive inside your positive conviction. You need only ride freely astride your own life stream, your life force releasing freely all the resources you need. Keep you on course to your dream. And isn't it a comforting feeling to depend on your own current flow, trusting the current knows just where to go? So even on seeming stormy, turbulent occasions, when rough seas seem to toss your craft to and fro, you need only breathe deeply the renewing ocean breeze. For how soon before you realize skies growing fair, clearing the ocean more gently streaming. For each breath, deep, sending currents of confident energy pouring warmly through you, the inner certainty you can do whatever necessary to achieve your dreams, your life force steering you clear through ever calmer seas, preserving you on your unswerving uniform course. Your dreamed destination, so deeply believed, sends within your persistent spirit. So those seeming rough seas are simply your invitation to become stronger, more resourceful in your solutions, your magical source. formulating the precise inspirations you need, strengthening you with your confident expectancy. I can live my life as I demand my life to be. Yes, as you're streaming forward with your own life, see. Sense the force in your demeanor, a new commanding presence, the absolute assurance you can achieve your dreams, as if decreed by a friendly providence, predestined to be. So those occasions the wind seems to cease, life seems to take the wind from your sails, and you make slow headway upon your trail, you need only remember those earlier occasions when you really came through, maintained your chosen course of navigation, reached your heart's true destination. For when your body breathes more deeply, deeply, perceive each breath drawing forth once more your self-assurance, your commanding sense of confidence, pouring warmly through you and so thoroughly energizing you. How soon before you realize, rising right from behind you, a gale of wind streaming, swelling your sails, propelling you forward, your renewed resolution, your enthusiasm leading you onward on your trail, right by the island of the sirens, those melodious singers who try to mystify mariners with naysaying songs, long rhapsodies of their so-called worldly wisdom, really a concoction of misconceived, misleading notions, intended only to lure sailors astray, away from their true destination, and draw them to the siren's land instead, the island of the narrow-minded. For those with an expanded awareness perceive most certainly, as do you, you can achieve your own commanding dreams. So as your body naturally breathes more deeply, deeply, how soon before you sense, emerging forth freely, your stream of confident energy, now streaming out, outwardly, swirling about and surrounding you, all the confidence you feel, your own potent force field, shielding you completely from those naysaying tunes, as you stream right by secure, self-assuredly relaxed, as if your ears were closed by wax, and so choosing to leave the sirens far, far behind, why not spend your time with those more positive in mind? For do you find the confident energy that shields you is positively too an attractive force field, drawing to you energy of a similar nature to your own, so you likely notice, as if magically, just the right opportunities and the right people too seem to be drawn to you, offering all the support you need on your course to your dreams. So if you require faster means to reach your destination, don't be surprised to realize solutions right in front of you, like presently a favorable wind leading your raft to the island kingdom of the Phaeacians, reputed seamen proficient in the craft of navigation, their palace rising higher, higher before you. So when you come ashore, how soon before you venture through this palace courtyard, the royal guard summoning you within the main chamber room to meet the learned elders, concertedly greeting you with the honor to an adventurer of the ocean sea. Surely these paragons of wisdom are charmed, captured by your alluring dream, naturally drawn toward your self-assurance in they admire the force of your positive conviction, your enthusiasm, your passion for life, your eyes shining with expansive vision, and desire only to support you and give you a hand, even furnish you with a ship to speed you forward to your destined meeting with your own homeland. Your dreams deeply believed, ever nearer, clearly seen. You need only extend your hand and grasp these. Yes, you can live your life as you demand your life to be. And when sensing deeply this commanding belief, then each new morn, how soon before you see your dream arise, on your horizon with opening wide as the endless extending sea. For you need only glide through any life challenge, confidently balanced astride your supporting life stream, a gentle breeze leading you forward toward the life of your dreams.
Now, as you're relaxing, just begin to come around back to normal waking awareness, understanding that you can achieve anything you desire to achieve, accomplish anything you desire to accomplish. It's just the way it is. Believe it, know it, and welcome back. Well, I appreciate you joining us tonight. Next week, I'll have another interesting topic. If you like the show, please tell others about it. If you have a topic you would like to have discussed, let me know. Email me at admin@mchschurch.org. If you like what you're hearing, I invite you to join the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, and you'll find us on the web at mchschurch.org. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Stay tuned for Dr. Vicky following this program. This is Doug Kelly encouraging you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a great week.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power of the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org.
This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective, Intuitive Life Advice. We are live. You can phone in. You can ask your questions on chat. And I am here to be of service, as I say. Intuitively, not just logically and sensibly, because sometimes those are the answers to questions that we can't see for ourselves, the objectivity that we try to have for ourselves. Always easier to give advice than it is to find advice for ourselves. So if there is absolutely anything at all that you have to ask about, please feel free to call in. The number is on the screen, 714-459-3973. So again, if you have any questions, I'll put on my little Spidey Senses hat and do my best to help you in any way I can. One of the things that was brought up earlier on Dr. Kelly's show is about self-observation and awareness. You know, it's not always easy, and everyone certainly has their own perspective of what that is. If you can ask 10 different people what their idea of is of how they see themselves in self-awareness, what does that mean? People who are doing kind of that self-study work, trying to be insightful and grow as a human being and develop, and perhaps working through some issues, generally come up with things like impatience or intolerance or control or moodiness in answer to who are you. But really, those are behaviors that have happened to the what of ourselves, not necessarily who we are. That's what we've become. And that's a very important distinction to make as we are self-learning. We're all hardwired. We're all born with perfectly designed gifts for this lifetime. And it is about peeling those layers away to find out what those patterns, what that processing is that's deep inside, how we function as an individual. And that individuality is crucial to building awareness, building your intuition, building your observation skills, learning reasoning skills. We are always going to be challenging ourselves, always going to be, it's interacting with other people that trigger things in ourselves that we perhaps weren't even aware of. So we're always going to be learning. We're always changing and growing and developing. That's a given. That's life, and life will happen. But who we are integrally doesn't change. That hardwiring, for instance, I am a borderline dyslexic. It is the way my brain works. It's a flutter from my eye to my brain. And it usually shows up when I'm very busy or I'm tired. The thing is, I can work with that. It's not a flaw. It's just the way she's written this time. It's not a flaw. It actually has me, in my view, become more aware and more awake to audio, visual, and other senses, more than, let's say, particularly reading a whole book. I'm very good at short things, not so much as long things, and yet I challenged myself as a writer because I can challenge it. It's something I have to really work at, but I love sculpting words. So the dyslexia is actually not what one would call a disability. It is my ability. That's the way it's hardwired. Again, I can work with that. It is the advantage I have. When I'm asked about to give impressions or psychic impressions, or whether that's by way of you know, with a hearing, something I might see in my mind. It comes in various forms. I know what voices do not belong to me, or impressions do not belong to me, because I know me. And that's the really important distinction to make. That's how I know I can trust it. Now, if I am not objective, if I am in any way emotionally involved, it does skew the way I will interpret that information and how I'm going to, you know, give it to someone else. It's very important that we gain the self-awareness and to develop that objectivity to the best of our ability when we're working with other people, interacting with other people, and do our best not to take it to heart. And this isn't just about professional capacity. It can be a social situation. It can be a work situation. It can be any number of situations that requires us to be observant and to interact, hopefully in a healthy, productive, progressive, and what I call just this adult way. We don't want to over-respond, over-react. We want to have that pause button that says, this is who I am. I'm on any other day, that might not bother me, but it does. Push the pause button, breathe, and be aware of what's going on. Read it to the best of our ability. So that is that objectivity of the self and how we get to know the self little by little. Now, one of my great mentors and teachers would say the best we can hope for is subjective objectivity, which that just makes sense because it's still life through my eyes. I am subjective in everything I see. So the interpretation is going to be through my eyes, through my mind, through my brain, through my body, through the day's experiences, and hopefully, you know, brought out in a good way that, you know, however I'm presenting myself is in a good way, but still being natural to me. It's being true to me. But it's still subjective, even though I'm trying to be objective. But that is the reasoning capacity that we each has in our intelligence. And I believe in that humanity's reasoning abilities that is now beginning, we hope. This is what I see. Bright lights, you know, starting to pop open. People are starting to illuminate. And they're gaining a reasoning capacity again. Something that says, geez, something here isn't quite right. I want to think about this. Well, you need to observe and think. So it's not just thinking and then observing, because that's controlling. That's a little too subjective. We want to observe. And we want to observe ourselves, saying, geez, I would have reacted differently to that before, but I'm more receptive to it now. So we have, again, an increase of reasoning, because we have an increase of awareness and objectivity. So this will continue to be progressive. It's not easy to keep thinking. Thinking, you know, it's hard work. When we now live in a world of technology, so much is written, we are relying, I'm afraid, lesser on the physical energies that we get from each other. You know, Skype is a wonderful thing when you have the visual also, because it adds a new dimension. You go to the store, you go to work, you know, you're interacting with family over dinner. You have that physical energy moving. But when we're in a flat zone, it's what I call the flat zone, it's extra work. And it requires a real sharp instinct to really zero in to say, what do they mean? Or like, I think maybe this isn't quite what they mean, but we can't also be the guessing game. We have to learn to be accountable to the words on a text message, an email. And I make mistakes too. I say, oh, yikes, I could have been misinterpreted on that. Backspace, delete. A good practice then is in any kind of communication is to review it. And then review it again if you have to. But that's not the way the world is now. It's very fast. And it doesn't allow us to take that pause to say, what am I feeling? What am I sensing? What am I thinking about that? And now, how do I want to interact with that? How do I want to respond? Very critical steps in the journey towards self-awareness. So I'm just going to pause for a moment and check the chat room and see if there's any calls, if there are any questions in chat or comments, anything that anyone wants to discuss or talk about. I see John is okay acknowledging that there is no emotional tone or facial expressions when you use, you know, text messages in computers. Absolutely. We don't have that extra dimension. So we have to have sharper skills. But if we are, if we have the self agenda, and if people have that need for a particular reaction, there's a lot of miscommunication. The miscommunication, when you say, geez, let's learn about communication, people automatically think about internet, telephones, you know, telecommunications and otherwise. Communication is communication, and it is about communication skills, how we interact with one another. We have to give that daily reminder to ourselves and each other that we are people first. Very interesting thing, I've talked to perhaps a half a dozen people in this last week who are slowly removing themselves a little bit from Facebook, certainly cutting down on it because they're missing the phone calls. I know I do on occasion. I make a point of at least once or twice a week to pick up the phone to someone and say, you know, I see you on Facebook, but I really love to hear your voice. So that makes us all feel special and important and keep that interpersonal relationship going, that it's that intimate place between us that we can't get anywhere else without a telephone or one-on-one. And of course, food has notoriously been that wonderful shared space. So I encourage people, if there's any way that you can, you know, have a cup of coffee with a friend, or go out and share some lunch or a muffin. It's a wonderful way to keep that interaction going, to sharpen our skills, to begin to socialize. I'm the first one to admit, too, sometimes I get so involved at home in work with people that the actual socializing gets a little deficient. And it's even all these years later, it's revisiting how to socialize, how to be in the world with people. But it always goes back to, who am I? And that reminder of who I am. How am I hardwired? And then how can I challenge myself to be in the world, realizing what patterns I may have built, even inadvertently, and what am I tripping over in myself that I didn't mean to get, habits, little things, lots of things that I can improve on. Well, you can't know what they are until you actually interact. We are social beings, and we have these extraordinary abilities, including intuition, including an ESP, that we must continue to develop and grow it. It's like watering it. You got to keep growing it. Now, I notice that Catherine has a question here in the chat room. Why does my written word have a better flow than my spoken word? They're both coming from my thought processes. Well, first I want to say some people are just, it comes easier. The written word comes easier. There's between yourself and, let's say, the keyboard or yourself and a pen is a better flow. It doesn't go to the people before it goes to it. You see, it's how you're interacting. It's the first spatial experience of interaction. So the written word would flow better because it's impartial. But if you're looking at someone, and if you are particularly intuitive, this is a really big one. If you're particularly intuitive and you have something to say, your thoughts could be colliding with their thoughts and energy, and something's bouncing around, so your words, your spoken word, doesn't flow. I've had it myself, and of course, you know, you always say later, geez, in hindsight, oh, I should have said this, or I could have said that. But there's a this tripping over energy that happens between us. That's quite common, actually. So it's not anything wrong. It's just developing the skill to have that flow from yourself and then experience the flow from someone to yourself. Here's a very interesting thing to think about. When, you know, about 33, 35 years ago when I studied hypnosis, an experiment that we did in class many times was about how you may be not receiving information or sending information properly. If you get a particular pain or pressure in the front of your head, perhaps what you're sending to someone is ricocheting back and hitting you in the front of the head. Also, it could be that somebody is sending a message, but you're not getting it, and the front of your face actually hurts. And it's a very interesting kind of observation to make in interacting with people. If you're especially in that ESP zone, that, you know, ventromedial prefrontal cortex, the third eye, if that feels particularly sensitive, there's something to observe in the way the energy is flowing. Now, sometimes when I'm talking to someone, I wait for a physical reaction also to see if what I've said has been received or if it's just, you know, slapping me back in the face, so to speak, or literally. I can feel, I hear somebody saying yes, they're nodding their head yes, but I feel the energy is bouncing back to me, and I know it didn't flow to and through them, so I can feel they didn't understand what I was saying. So then I tend to very carefully rephrase it and then feel if it's been received better. Because I know most people want to be agreeable. We all want to be agreeable. We all want to get along. So we nod our heads, say yes, but we really didn't get it. So this is what we're also doing to others. If we are saying, yes, I get it, and we don't, their energy, their body feels it. So this is where we get to the honesty of ourselves and the honesty with others in the communication with others. It is very fair to say, can you rephrase that to me, or can you say that again? Because, you know, I picked up every third word, but I didn't quite get it, or I'm sorry I got distracted, or can you give it to me in another way that my brain process can receive it better? Now, we aren't always going to understand each other 100%, but it does help us get on the same page. So we can all get on a similar, close to same page. Some days I'm just happy that we're all in the same book, to be honest. You know, because sometimes when it comes to texting and internet with emails and so on, for as much as I love it, it does have its deficiencies that makes me shake my head. And I say, okay, wait a minute, I have to turn my page. What does this mean? I mean, English is being abbreviated to ways that I'm always having to ask somebody, what does that mean? So we have to continually upgrade our abilities, it's basically having to learn to read all over again or learn English all over again. But we cannot ever forget and always remember everything comes from inside the self, and it's about energy. So Catherine just made another comment here. When I think about it, she says, my written word comes from my heart. The spoken word comes from more effort in trying to be understood on an intellectual level. But that makes sense. Again, there's that you're wanting to be heard. So that's an intent. And you're making, we all do this. We want to make that extra effort with hopes to be understood. And even that extra effort with hope, you know, is a small measure of control. So we have to just relax, push the pause button, and just say, I'm going for it, and I hope I'm understood, and if I'm not, then I hope that they will ask me so that I can find another word or another sentence to explain it. And this is the learning. If it's on an intellectual level, this is such a competitive world. And right from, very early age, we're taught to compete. And if we can't compete, we start to develop, and I've had this in my life too, where we start to feel inferior. And how to then compete at an intellectual level? How am I saying this where I sound like I'm intellectual or that I'm intelligent? I honestly, and I'll say this honestly to you, it wasn't until I started into my 50s that I believed, truly believed, that I am intelligent. Certainly I knew I was kind of clever and smart in some ways, but I didn't know if I could compete in other ways. So there's always these little gaps or little holes or little areas to look at about how we are competitive and don't realize it. Keeping in mind that the competitiveness comes from reward, that if you get the straight A's, you'll get rewarded. If you do well at the school concert, you'll get praised. If everybody claps at your dance recital, then that's praise. Everything is a reward, but there's very little for inner reward. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't support each other and clap our hands and cheer people on. I'm just saying that the program in the brain. As Eric Fromm, I just love this writer from, way ago, says it's our early orientation. And we are ingrained to believe that if we are not rewarded in a particular way, we are not good enough. This will inhibit intuition by far more than anything else will. It numbs our senses. It fogs the third eye. It gets in the way because we now inadvertently have an agenda to please, to perform, to be understood, and raise ourselves up in a way that we're not living from our internal self anymore. We're living from the face that we present to the world. This is the kicker. It really is the kicker of how we can think we know who we are, but we don't. We think that we are, illuminating, we're becoming more conscious. If you say the right prayer, you too will become illuminated. We're not. It really is coming from the inside. So very often I say to people, as I certainly, keep doing the work on myself, peeling layers away. Now, even as I peel back the layers, I'm building new ones. And see, that's another kicker. That people can do their child work, but now we got to do the adult work. So it's just to pause for a moment, be in the now of who we are, not what, who we are. When you breathe it, then we can see what we've become, what we show to the world. Very recently I had a client who, it's a wonderful young girl, beautiful new mom. She's just really a very bright girl. One of the things, she comes across with a bravado and a lot of confidence, but I can pick out, and I said, this is general psychology. I said, there's certain things to ask yourself about what you're presenting to the world. How do people see you? And of course, she came back with a very confident answer that said, that's none of my business. Because I love that hook line. It's on Facebook all over the place now. How other people see me is none of my business. That's true. But what image are you presenting that you would like them to see? Because if we're in that competitive world, and if we're trying to sell ourselves, then we have to be conscious of what we're wearing, how we're doing our hair, and you do it anyway. And so there's that kind of talking under the both sides of our mouths where we say on one hand we don't care, but we do care because we're trying to get a point across. We all want to be validated and we all want to be understood. To be comfortable with who you are, does not mean you're not going to dress up when you go to the cocktail party. You're still going to get into a costume to go to work, and it's all costuming. It's what we're presenting, and hopefully as consistently as we can be, being in a true kind of application to the moment. And that's also part of being present. So yes, while we have to be ourselves, we have to also coexist in the competitive world, because that's the reality. I see that Catherine said, why are we trying to sell ourselves? We are all trying to, whether it's as right down to our biology, Catherine, of trying to mate, find the partner when you're young. If you remember, you know, it's like giving off the pheromones and the scent because you're wanting to attract something, to I want to look good for the job so that I fit in, I find an acceptance, and at least find a shared space. We are a herd people. We are social beings, and we will find those ways to apply ourselves to fit in. Now, the selling ourselves goes with partly the society we've created, that we must continue to sell ourselves, but hopefully still being true to who we are. It's just the way it is. And as much as I would like to say, geez, who cares if I go out the door without my makeup on, we do care. They care. There's a whole different response that we get from one way to the other. I'm not saying everybody should wear makeup. Hold the phone here. I'm just saying that there are different responses we're going to get in different social environments by how we present ourselves. If somebody has all this broken nail polish on their fingernails, what does that say to the world? It says to me that somebody hasn't the follow-through. There's no follow-through. You know, okay, the nail polish is all chipped off, but she doesn't care. She goes out into the world anyway, and she says, I don't care if it's all chipped off. And I'm going, okay, then she doesn't care about something about herself. My little flags go up. It generally means that something's unpolished. I mean, literally, it's unfinished. It's uncultured. It's either take the nail polish off if it's chipping or fix it. Because it's the follow-through, it's the package. Yes, we can say, who cares what the world says? Who cares what the world wants? But I'll tell you, the girl who's tattooed from her earlobes down to her toes is not likely going to get her application accepted into the police force. In fact, you know, if this is just a presentation that we give to the world to coexist. One of the things that I find is, and I do agree to a point, people, because I've been doing readings a long time, people would very often come to me expecting big hoop earrings, the scarf around the head, the long skirt. Well, you might see the long skirt, but you also might see my dirty nails because I'm coming out of the garden. Usually you'll see me in jeans and a t-shirt. But if I'm going out, I'll throw on a jacket, I'll throw something on, because it makes us feel better. My measure of work in the day will be how the measure of care I've given to myself. It's called self-regard, self-respect, and then how I'm going to present myself to others, still being true to me, but understanding that I am going to see clients, I am going to see people. And if they come and my hair's not brushed and my teeth aren't cleaned, this is not a credibility that I'm giving to others. If I appear like I care about me, then they will believe me better that I care about them. Because we can only give what we have for ourselves. Perhaps the saleability goes too far. I'm not into Hollywood myself, but there is that relationship that we have with the world. Everybody gets up in the morning and puts on clothes, whether it's your sweatpants or your blue jeans. You're picking a costume. What's it going to be? Are you going to wear sweatpants to the office? I doubt it, because there is a culture at the office. There's a culture at your grocery store. some restaurants, like the waitresses, to be dressed the same. That's the culture of the place. So if you want to go work at that restaurant, you're going to have to wear the uniform. It's just the application of the self to the circumstance. So in our energy reading, we can see beyond that. You can see somebody in the $600 suit who's just a really genuine, wonderful kind of guy. But you're not likely going to say the same thing about the guy who is homeless on the street who hasn't brushed his teeth for 3 days. So the wonderful guy is in there, in spirit, with the energy. So we can make these distinctions between our visual world, our visual stimuli, how we learn to get along as a collective, as a cooperative, but still being in touch with the energy. And if we understand that we are spiritual beings learning to be human, then we can get about the business of humanity and restoring our energy to its truest form in who we are. Our objectivity of the self in our awareness and to keep developing. So I noticed that Catherine has made a mention of what I've been saying. She mentioned in the chat room that that's prejudice. We're all prejudiced. Every single one of us. Whether you, if it's somebody saying, I want to meet a woman, I want to meet a man, but I really want somebody with these prerequisites, that's a prejudice. Everybody has their own attraction thing, their own thing that they're appealing to. I would like to say I don't judge by outside appearance, but I do if it smells. I mean, I stay 10 feet away. It's not to say I'm not going to treat somebody with humanity, but I am going to stay about 10 feet away. Is that a prejudice? Absolutely. You know, life on Earth is conditional, whether we like to admit this or not. I may love you, but I cannot let you hit me. That's a condition to love here on Earth. I love you spiritually. That will be forever. But I cannot let certain things happen on the Earth in the actual. I cannot be in my life with somebody who's a detriment to my well-being, even though I love them. It's just the way it is. Life on Earth, love on Earth, is conditional. It has conditions to Earth law. Each of us has our own karma, if you will, our own pathway, our own preferences, our own view. That's the beauty of individuality. The energy and fairness, recognizing these things about ourselves, is part of the self-study, the self-awareness. If I know that I have a prejudice against yellow kitchens, which I do, by the way, I don't like yellow kitchens. You know, there's a whole history with me and yellow kitchens. I just don't like them. And if I go to someone's house and it happens to have a yellow kitchen, I recognize that I'm irritable. Right from the minute I walk in the door, I'm irritable. I breathe. I calm down. I acknowledge that I have a prejudice. Take in the energy and say, I'm okay with it because I'm with the people, even though I don't like yellow kitchens. We always have a preference. If we have a preference, we have a prejudice. So we would hopefully begin to wake up to energy. Catherine just asked a question. Would you walk by a fallen homeless person or would you stop and help them up? Yeah, I picked a few up in my time too, Catherine. Actually, I lived on the street, so I know it well. But the smell could be perfume. Because I'm allergic to perfume, it gives me migraines. I actually take Tylenol the minute a client comes in smelling of perfume. So it doesn't have to be certain things. I have a prejudice about perfume, honestly, only because I'm allergic. But we can take this to the nth degree. It's just owning a truth about ourselves. Being true to energy, the energy of ourselves, and restoring a humanity, a we can't do that until we know who we are. So if we know who we are better, and we open up to the love within ourselves, we can have love in our humanity, love in the experience. Thank you very much for participating, Kathy, and I love that. It's exciting, and I look forward to next week. Again, tell your friends, tell other people that we're here. Dr. Kelly is on in the hour prior, that I'm here for, I call it an open psychic line, if you will. If somebody likes me to do their numbers, the cycles they're in, if they have questions on a relationship or a situation, or let's say it's just, you know, in the journey of self-study. So I'm here. So again, next, absolutely, John made a little comment in there, and it's free. Absolutely, John, thank you. Congratulations to John joining the show. We look forward to many more Sunday evenings. So thanks for joining us, and have a good week. Good night, everyone.